This is Their Life Story Podcast with Robin Levine. I have always believed that everybody has something to teach all of us. In this series of interviews, I will talk to all types of people in order to learn from and be inspired by them and their life stories. I'm excited to announce that my guest this week is Mark Perry. Mark is an amazingly talented singer and songwriter. He tells stories with his songs about the areas he loves, like the Bulkley Valley, BC, and Canada, and a lot of them are really fun. Some are really real, which speaks to the kind of guy Mark is. He's really humble, he's really down to earth, he's really nice, and he's really funny, and he shares a ton of great anecdotes from his life in this interview. We talk a lot in this interview about what it was like for Mark to write and play Queen of the North throughout his local area. And so I wanted to share it with you to start off this interview.
I heard the news in the early morning. The Queen of the North went down. 99 people got off, and there's two that may never be found. She hit Gill Island on the starboard side and suffered a jagged tear. The whole vessel shook. There was water everywhere. One man closed the bulkhead doors, trying to hold the ocean back. Coast Guard called and lifeboats lowered. There was only time to act. There was crew waist deep in the water, making sure everybody got out okay. And from a distance, they watched the bow go under. They moved towards Hartley Bay. Nineteen knots. Be a deadly force when you run through the night water and you're running off course. From Port Hardy to Prince Rupert, the people come around and they talk about the North and what she meant to their town. And the first trip they remember, then the last. Now she went down so fast. Just off Gill Island, the water rocks gently back and forth, and 1,400 feet below lies the Queen of the North.
Yeah, it's been an exotic week already. So how you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for taking this interview, Mark. I've been looking forward to it ever since we started talking about it.
Okay, well, I don't know what good I'll be, but we'll just BS for a while. You know what's funny is if you look at your own life or whatever, it's kind of boring, right? Like, I mean, everyone's life there's nothing sensational to report. It's lots of, you know, little bumps and little kind of things go up and down.
Yeah, I think it feels like that to you, but to other people, it might be something that they can hardly imagine, you know?
Yeah, I suppose. I feel very fortunate in a lot of things because I got to do something I like to do, you know, and I can still do it. And, you know, the decay's starting in, but it's kind of weird because there's another thing that happens. Your voice isn't the same as it was, but in some ways it gets more character and everything. So it's kind of neat that way, right? And then your brain doesn't work like it used to. Like the sharpness that you have, mine's kind of, you know, getting duller, and it's the natural cycle of the decay of us, us humans. Oh, God. Anyways.
I was wondering how your music had progressed. It's just as you age, you're different, hey? Like, you're just, without even trying, you're just different.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting how your music has changed. Because, you know, I think chordally and everything, like my guitars, I've searched for tunings and things that put me in a mood, you know, and I have more, and also I value stories just a general feel. If like, I just look at, did I get something there? And it doesn't have to be a perfect A to B story, but if you get a little mood in the mode and it kind of turns out, it's kind of cool to have that. And then it's gone, right? On to the next one.
When you come up with your song, is there like a common place or thing that you're doing when something hits you for a song? Is there like somewhere that you go to get in that creative space?
Well, I have a little studio kind of shed, but that's only been this year. You know, this year, like everybody, like, I don't know who hasn't been depressed and down and up. How could you not? I mean, you know, you got lunatics. There's people that are voted in that say that forest fires are caused by Jewish laser beams from space and these kind of things. And you hear them and you're going, like, someone voted for you. So that and COVID is the big one, right? Like, that's, I think, why everything's festering and you got this overpopulation plan. So if you can be above depression, I honor you. It's not hard, right? Like, for, I'm talking about all humans. And I of course, I'm very capable of going there too. And so this winter, I would wake up with ideas and I would just be like at 4:30 or 4 o'clock and have an idea. And I go out there into my shed and just pound away, you know. And sometimes I'd wake up with almost a whole song in my head, like melody, a hook melody, the chorus and a couple lines for the verse. And I'm thinking, if I go back to sleep, I'm going to lose this. So I boing, and it was really a really cool. And I got some really neat songs out of that, but that was unusual. That's this winter was, I think probably on the planet's been the most stressful winter we've endured. And I think I just reacted to that. And that's why I was going crazy. Like I wrote it 30 or so songs. Eh? I'm not saying they're, you know, magnificent pieces of art, but anyways, I did that. I went from a guy driving into an old basketball court late at night, and that's not even on the record, and like all these kind of weird vibes, and I just, you have them in your brain and just put them out there, right? And you work away, and you sometimes get these neat things, you know.
Was that something that helped you get out of depression? Is it like therapy?
Yeah, I think so. I think, well, it's just like fighting to it's escapism. That's what it's it allows you to escape. Like if you read a book, you know what's kind of cool, you know who Emily Carr is, of course,
of right? course.
Yeah, there's a book of hers and it's called Klee Wick.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's a very short, I gotta tell you, this friend of mine, he's almost 80, he reads copious amounts of books. Like he's like a bookaholic, you know, and he reads and reads and he retains it. He'll retain, if he reads a book from 1960s, he'll start talking to you about it now.
No way.
It's unbelievable. My older brother, one of my older brothers, John, he's a lawyer and he retains stuff too. It's ridiculous. The two of them start talking and they'll talk about, you know, something that happened in the war. And, you know, when I read this about this, well, I read this about this, and it's like, anyways, I was reading Emily Carr at the time of this, and this little book is called Klee Wick, and it is an amazing book. Like, it's just, it's really short stories, 3 or 4 pages, and she was kind of cruising around painting the West Coast. She was cruising around, you know, she'd hire a couple First Nations people, and they'd drop her off in this old deserted village, right? And it was decaying, and she talked about watching a family. She just talks about watching a family paddle up in a old dugout canoe onto the beach. And you just read, you read these stories, and they're like, I loved them, eh? But it's kind of like, I was thinking, it's, there was a decay going on all the time during these stories, right? The common thread is like this civilization is the way it was, is kind of going gurgle, 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 right? And anyways, I guess what I'm saying is I drew because I felt somewhat similar to what's going on right now. It's a different path, but it just, there's something, you know, anyways, I really loved her writing. And Lou, the guy I was telling you about that retains everything, he said that she's an incredible writer. And Joni Mitchell says about her, she says she's a better writer than she's a painter. She's talking about, yeah.
Wow. I never even thought of her as a writer. I knew she had some books, but I just thought they were like briefly explaining her paintings.
No, if you need something, how can you tell someone they're going to love something? Because you don't know, right? I don't know what your tastes are or what.
But I like good writing.
Yeah, well, this, if you like, this won't trouble you, right? Because it's going to be like, you'll get this little book. It's called Kleewick, and it's about, it's not nothing. It's like, the stories, a lot of them are like 3-5 pages long. Some are like really long, up to 14 pages. But you can read them. There's a lot of information in one, and it's kind of neat, actually. I would, if I was going to say a recommended book of hers to anyone, that's what I would, the one I would say, because it takes you to a place, and it actually inspired the hell out of me for songwriting, because I almost feel like when I was writing something, I was getting kind of verbose, and I'm really, you know, using language in this, aren't I cool? You know, that's a nice word. And I could just hear her grab me. That, why do you use that stupid word? Why don't you leave it so people can, you know, like make it more to the point, you know, and a brief, like I almost got that out of that book. I could just about hear her lecturing me, you know, I didn't even know she'd be like that, but there's something about the brevity of it and the strength in it, the power of us, an abbreviated space, you know, there's a lot in there.
So did it kind of just remind you to keep things concise and not fluff it up too much and just say what you want to say?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. As when you're writing, you know, you do a check, because sometimes it, like, you know, you do something, you think you're pretty cool. Eh? You think, oh man, this is, I got something. Then I look at it next day. What's all this fluff about? You know, sure, they're nice words and they work, but What are they? They're just spew, you know? It's like, I hear songwriting and things that, it's like this and everything. Well, that's good if you can deliver it. But if you can't, it's just covering up the core of it. And I guess, really, when you're writing a song, if it's good, and I'm not claiming all my things are like, you know, I shudder if someone played some of my stuff I don't like, you would see the blood drain from my face, and I'd be looking for the exit out of the door.
And that's funny. I can't think of anything that has more than it needs in your songs. I always thought they were concise.
Oh yeah, well. But, you know, some of them are, I think they are, but they're just not that good, you know, some of them. I just want, you know, you're a writer, right?
I write sometimes. I journal often, and I've written a couple things. I used to write for the Interior News, actually.
Yeah.
But I know what it's like to think you're a hotshot and then read it the next day and go like, oh my gosh, this is the dumbest thing I could have written. What was I thinking?
A year later is actually it's really soul bearing.
Usually the smarter I think I am at the time, the dumber I think I am later when I read it.
But the fact is that if you get it, then there's something good about it, you know? If you get But if you're actually the next day, you're still walking around thinking you're just a genius. But if you understand, it's just, oh, God, did I put that there? The fact that you got that is a good sign, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did anyone ever give you any advice about how to write songs, or did you just go, I'm doing this?
I've been writing songs since I was a little, you know, learned my first chord. They would be really bad, but I wrote a lot of songs, and there were segments of songs. I played in a band when I was 13 in Chandler Park, but there was live mm-hmm. bands then, because there was no, not disco wasn't even really, there was lots of bands in every little town. Like, you know, there would be the Vern Barge band was around forever. The Sundowners, the Ted Middleton, Vern Barge, and those guys, I think they were forever. I was bored and they were playing. they're gone, you know, they just kept playing. But there was lots of bands, pockets of bands. There was Mark Hallenstein, all these guys, and John Haru. I watched these guys growing up playing, right? And we wanted to go and do that. You just go in the basement, make your ears bleed, do the same thing over and over and over. And you find one song you like. And I remember hearing Creedence Clearwater Revival. And I thought, that's cool, man. It's that guy's voice and that whole, and, you know, I mean, now I can't listen to that stuff. But, you know, back then when I heard it, I just said, that is, and so you just go make your fingers bleed. You figure out the chords and you just do them over and over and over again. And I traded an old lawnmower for an electric guitar.
That was your first electric?
Yeah, and then we just wailed away. You know, our poor neighbor, we practiced in their basement. And she would come downstairs sometimes and turn that stuff down. You boys are going to go deaf. That's terrible. Not the same thing. And then the poor woman, but saintly enough, we'd be down there the next day and she'd just shake her head, and when the volume got too loud, and we even had a room at behind Chandler Park. There was practice rooms for bands. You just go there, and do you know Warner Eichstetter?
Yeah, is that who got you started? Is that who taught
he
you?
He used to let us. He was a huge part. He gave us. He would give us a place to practice in school. After school and in between at lunch hour, he said, if you guys want to practice, I'll get you a key. And, you know, we owe him. I mean, he put up with us. He helped drive us to these little gigs, you know, where we could play about our four or five songs. And, you know, people would say, when are those guys going to leave? And then
were those originals you were playing back then?
Probably not. We probably played some original, but one or so. You know, I would hate to think of what it was, but somebody once told me, I like that song. He said, that was kind of, yeah, it's just all you need, eh? Because then it just evolves, and songwriting is, it's just a chase. You know, I love it still. I still, if you can chase a feeling, a mode, and if there's a story that moves you and you put it, like Queen of the North of songwriting, it's, for instance, that is a different song for me because I'd ridden the boat the fall before it sank.
Oh.
And I played in Prince Rupert, and I had people that watched me play had come out, were on that boat that night.
Oh.
So I got, there's a lot of lyrics on that song that people told me stories about what had actually happened on that thing.
Yeah. Because
on the newscast itself, if it talked about the wonderful First Nations community that came out and rescued them, right, and towed their boats in. But in actual fact, they never set foot on that boat. You know, 99 people were on that boat, and it was sinking fast.
Wow.
It was sinking really fast. It was in late at night. They were going into people's rooms, shaking them, waking them up, and dragging them out through water.
It's like the Titanic of BC.
Yeah, it's crazy what happened that night in a very short segment of time, right? they did that. And so I had all that, like I had that information because they told me about it. They started sending me little notes, and one woman wrote me a letter and an email stuff I started. And so I had all that information in my brain, you know, like I was reading, I was, holy shit. So it's kind of, so I had that, I knew what I was going to write, or I knew all these parts, but I didn't know what I was like. I didn't know if there was going to be a, you get these things and it's intriguing stuff, right?
That was all really intriguing. It almost seems like you think just like a writer, let alone a songwriter, like not just a songwriter, but you just think like a writer a lot of the times.
Mm-hmm. So well, that story in particular, if you think about what went on there, it was an amazing story, right? Like, because what we just talked about, it was just this boat sinking fast.
And people were saved from their rooms in their sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
These and that's a lot of people.
Pounded on doors. And there's one line in the song. It says, one man closed the bulkhead doors trying to hold the ocean back. So they were trying to get more people out. And that's the guy, I played that song in Rupert, and it's chilling to play it there. Oh, and then this girl came up, this little girl says, that was my dad.
Oh my gosh.
Now,
oh my gosh.
I had a little goosebumps and I was like, whoa, it was incredible. And that, it's just, there's so many, like, there's another song I wrote, it's called Port Essington. And it's,
I'm not sure if I know it.
Well, it's really, it's on an album. It's one of the last ones I did. But the song called Port Essington, and it's about Japanese internment camps in Rupert. And in Port Essington, the canneries that were I wrote it from the aspect of a Japanese woman coming back to Prince Rupert way after everything.
Oh, wow.
And walking onto the dock and seeing an old friend. And then they talked about what had happened, and then they went out to, they wanted to go up to Port Essington and just see what had happened and what they'd lost and all these things. It's like that time. This isn't a make or break song of all things, but it's pretty moving as a human being. What happened, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't capture everything that, if you think of what happened in the internment camps, I didn't do that. I just told this little story about this woman coming in, her friend meeting her, and they talked about what they'd lost and then how they were so full of hope at this certain time in their lives. And one of the choruses in Port Essington, we worked the canneries together, good people from all kinds of places. There was a large Japanese contingent, lots of natives worked there, lots of Germans and all other people. They all worked in the canneries there. And they worked together, and they apparently got along. It was a fabulous little community because they were getting paid and they were sending money back home, a lot of them. And the natives did really well because it was a really like embracing community, right, of all this stuff. And so it's very ghostly and kind of eerie there. And so anyways, I got that story out of it. And then I heard, like, there's incredible internment camp stories, you know? Incredible.
Seems like you you're really learning tons about like current affairs in BC, but also history of BC and Canada.
Yeah, it's neat. Eh? Like, you know, I met a woman. She's half Japanese. She told me her father and his younger brother fought for Canada in the Second World War.
Oh wow!
They had another younger brother who couldn't get in because he was too young, but he kept trying. Pearl Harbor comes, the two boys stay there for the duration of the war, fighting for Canada, and they were very well-respected soldiers. The younger brother, his mom and dad, got sent to an internment camp.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That's terrible.
It's incredible.
And they're just a family divided by the war.
Yeah. It's an incredible... moving part of, and I don't think it should be forgotten because like there's so many aspects to that story, and it makes life really interesting when you think about that. The Japanese were sent to internment camps, and the Germans weren't.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah,
definitely not.
And you're over there fighting these guys, the Germans and Italians, you know, like Canada's getting shot down on beaches by them, and their descendants are only a generation away. They don't get sent to any camps.
Canadians were really racist towards Japanese people back then. Like, well, like shockingly racist, and it doesn't get talked about very much.
Well, you know, there's so many things, eh? Like, and I'm not preaching, I'm observing, and there's so much that was done. And sometimes the other part of it is no one knew what to do. It's not like there's this manual, right? If you want to,
it's a new situation.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of racism, but there's racism all over the planet. I have Japanese friends and they're wonderful people. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the genius, country in the planet. Anyways, you know, there's so much. I just made it a simple little story, right? You can't, because it's so powerful. And so when you read it, you could be overwhelmed with guilt.
You seem like you really take pride in like the Bulkley Valley and all of BC, and I'm sure lots of places in Canada too. And you almost have like a Stan Rogers like feel about you, where you're just so passionate about Canada and Canadian history and events that it just sparks endless ideas for songs and writing in your head.
Well, you know, it is kind of neat. You know, if you say it's fun. I consider it. You know, like last year, I got to play in Bella Coola.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
It was really neat. You know, like, you know, some people go, you know, whatever, right? I just thought, that is one of the coolest, it's an amazing place. I got to play in Bella Coola.
What was it like when you played there?
Well, it was, you know, very small festival. Some people were up there. We had fun. And it was just music to some people. And it was just, I love a different landscape that I hadn't seen before. And I just considered it a total, to be there and play songs. And I even got a song out of it called Bella Coola Man, you know, and, you know, it's kind of fun.
That's right? Awesome.
Yeah.
Is that like one of the best parts about playing music is getting to meet people and go to different places?
Yeah, I think so. It's really fun too. Like I've played Bear Down. If you have a group of people that you like to work with, you play with and you get along with and you get in a room and play and it's, you can hear music happening, like dynamics start to happen. Once you get past the, well, where does this go? And then all of a sudden it becomes like music. And every once in a while when you're playing and you just feel like energy soar and you're listening to each other and you're working as a team. That's really, it's a very uplifting emotional experience, and you share it with some people, you know. Really, honestly, that is a huge, huge part. Like there's so many good things about it.
Sounds like it. Now that I think about it, there's lots.
Yeah. It's really, it's been a, I just, I feel, I feel so, so lucky I have it, you know.
Right.
Just really lucky. And I got to play in, like, it's weird. Last year, right around this time, I was playing in New Orleans.
New Orleans?
Yeah.
Oh, this is before it all went down.
Yes, yes. We were playing in New Orleans. I went down there with Tobin Frank. He lives on Vancouver Island. And Mark Tebow, and we went
awesome,
and we were a featured performer in this big North American Folk Alliance. So I got to play, you know, these songs on a little stage, and there's tons of people. It's only buyers, eh? And there's people that you would really like.
It's only buyers.
Yeah, it's basically all these folk clubs and music clubs around North America, and some from Europe too, come there to check out acts.
Oh, no way. Oh,
the problem is there's a lot of acts.
So you're like trying to get a contract or like tours?
Just play in front of people and expose, you know, kind of, and maybe some gigs some places. And we got actually some really cool contacts. We had lots of interest. We had a nice little tour lined up and lots of interest. And then COVID, of course, it's bad timing, right? Really bad timing.
So you guys were about to go on a world tour.
Not a world tour. No, Alberta tour. But we had interest in quite a few different places, like not just Alberta, but we had quite a bit of interest in some cool places. Little Pock did some interviews from like Tennessee and not Tennessee yet, something like that. It's one of those places down there. I can't remember now. I did a live interview with this guy, three-part interview about my songs and stuff, and just intriguing interest, right? The guys, and this lady from Long Island said how much she said you know, the problem is that you Canadians, it's hard to get you over here. It's not just easy, you know, but she had these people that just came up to you, and if they liked you, they were very, and it was neat. I met people. We played in little hotel rooms after that. Little tiny hotel rooms.
That's awesome.
Three of us in there, and I did a song where I sing, you're bouncing around from these rooms to rooms and playing. And there was people that played in Austin City Limits in those shows, playing in a hotel room the same size as mine, about three doors down. So it's like crazy, right?
That sounds like some rock star stuff.
Yeah, and then we went downtown in New Orleans. It was crazy. Like, there's music there. They're so good.
I bet. They
just play all the time. That's what they do, right? They go out in the street, they throw their hat out and play. You go to this bar, and there's this woman singing in this bar, and it's so, I think it's called the Spotted Turtle or something, with this one club, is so packed in there. And this is pre-COVID. I just wriggled my way and pinned myself against the wall. You're pinned. There's so many people in there. And this woman is a fantastic singer. Like, she's so good. There's like a six-piece band. And then she walks around like this. She's singing, the band's playing with, and she's holding this freaking jug, and people are sticking money in it. Eh?
Oh, really? That would be an amazing experience, seeing that.
Yeah, it was nuts. I was like, I'm still, when I think about it, I go, this was a year ago. Right now.
But you're not even allowed to think about going to somewhere that crowded.
Well, there was going to be another one in Kansas City, which we weren't going to this year, but it got canceled, of course. Yeah, they're all canceled. Everything's canceled. All the folk festivals, all the...
That must be hard on your mindset too. You had all these cool things in your future, and then it's like, no, just kidding. You could just sit home now for an indefinite amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not 31 or some young guy like that anymore. You know, when you finally get some cool opportunities, and the only reason I got cool opportunities is because I have someone who's really awesome, that Sandra Smith, is helping me out. She's doing our bookings, and she's just really been so positive, and people like her. And I never even talked to those people before. I never went to those. I would never go anywhere, you know. And then all of a sudden, you got to go here. Well, you got to try to go here. And the next thing I know, it's just, you know, like, she has been a joy to work with.
Yeah, I get the sense you wouldn't want to have to sell yourself. Like, this is why you should let me go to your festival or something.
Who would want to do that? Who
doesn't? Yeah, doesn't
like that, applying for a job? Who enjoys applying for a job?
Yeah, constantly. Hey, constantly.
Yeah. Oh, you're trying to sell yourself? Oh no, forget it. Yeah, you wait for the phone to ring, you know, and just if somebody likes you, then they can hire you. You don't. Yeah, that's the way. But then, you know, then you've got a very small pocket, a very small place, and you know, you'll get these nice little bonuses. And word of mouth, you'll get that. But someone has to be, because a lot of people want those jobs. We played Bouchard Gardens last year.
Oh, that must have been awesome.
It was fantastic. Had a great big band, all fantastic people to be with. And it was really fun playing there. Really fun.
Do you feel really proud of yourself just to even like just be at a level where people are paying you to go to different towns and entertain them and have fun with them?
Proud of myself is good about myself. You know, it's kind of, that's a funny thing. That's a funny question. Is there, are you proud? I've got Catholicism. I was brought up as a Catholic, right? I haven't been to church for many, 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 many years.
But except to play, except to play
at Waterloo. Guilt, and you are not good. You know, don't ever think you're good at anything. That's drilled into you. That's so, drilled into you from a core. So, like, it's in your inner core, and you go to confession, right? You know, here's a little kid. What'd you do? Pick your nose or something? You know, poke your brother with a stick, and you got to go and say all these. You know, what did you do? You quitted.
Yeah, not a big deal. It's pretty normal stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty normal. Nothing really, but you make up something.
Yeah, you almost got to make up something to get out of there.
Yeah, so then you do say your Hail Marys and go. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's something humbling about it too. You know, like, it's really, in a way, because I think some humans should be a lot humbler than they are. And we, you know, like the guy down below us there that's just got kicked out of his office, sort of, you know, like they need a humbling lesson, you know, like you it's not all about you and all that stuff is, so there's the good side of that, but also then you always, there's a guilt feeling as soon as you get some success or as soon as something good happens to you, you know, you do deserve it. That's always, that's in me.
So you know, you felt guilty core. When good things happen to you, you
don't. Well, I belittle it, you know. Like, I'm joyous about it because I love it, but I think that's why I got away, because I live and revel in guilt of any kind. You know, it's just the way it is.
Do you think it ever? What's that?
You can't escape it.
Do you think it like holds you back from like getting even bigger? You want the guilt?
I think timing of things, you know, a lot of things are timing, right? I think what's like, I'm not saying would be a big shot anywhere, but I think I have a good strong group of songs, like I have to draw from a core, and if I have the right guys to play with and present them, we could do a good job. We're not like, you know, I watched what's her face there when she sang the national anthem, Lady Gaga. You know, she is so good. Like, she's incredible. Like,
her voice.
I can't walk in her shadow. Like, I don't deserve to rush the ground. She is, you know, I hardly ever listen to her or anything. But then you see how good she is.
It's shocking.
She is so effing amazingly good. Like, you know, you hear, when I heard her sing the national anthem, which is a cool anthem, as much as, you know, we've got our American brothers where we got them, but when she sang that song, I remember listening to her and I was going to go, where's she going to go with this? Because her voice is so rich and so good. And I went, holy shit. And then she kind of went for it, and I was, this is, you know, it's just like, wow, she's incredible.
She's amazing.
She is that good, you know. So, you know, if your success, like where you deserve to be, like if I can have my space as a, you know, a nice little rootsy songwriter has a group of songs that maybe represent an area and tell a story, I'm happy with that. I don't expect, like, that is so deserved and so much talent and so much that, and also she's from New York, right?
Yeah, like, big. That's a big pond, you know.
I think we're kind of like the capital of the planet, right? You know, people can say what they want about everything, but it's this intense melting pot of people, and it's just in. If you can make it out of there, because the competition is just, it must be.
Totally.
And like she's Lady Gaga, whatever. You can say anything you want about her if you don't like her music or anything, but she's undeniable talent.
It'd almost be a crime if she didn't get famous.
Yeah, because then we wouldn't get to see her. Eh?
Yeah, we'd be missing out. We just wouldn't know.
Yeah, it's just incredible.
Yeah, she's her movie A Star Is Born. It just blew me away because I didn't like I don't listen to her all the time. I knew how good she was, but then watching her movie, it just takes it. You realize she's on a whole nother level.
You know what else is kind of cool about that? She insisted on doing all those takes live.
No way.
Yeah, those are not fake takes. Overdub, blah, blah. That's her, man.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's even more impressive. That is even more impressive. I never thought that would have been live. I just thought that was dubbed over.
Yeah, no, that's live takes from her.
Wow. Wow, yeah. That's really cool to learn that.
If I have my little niche and if I get to travel across Canada a bit, you know, parts of Canada, and if I go to these little, like that thing in New Orleans, I'm super happy. You know, I don't have the Lady Gaga stuff. I'm just not there. I'm not that level. So I'm happy to be that kind of storyteller persona if I deserve it, and if I bring something to the table, it'd be a really nice achievement, you know?
Yeah, I think you've earned a great reputation, and not in just the Bulkley Valley area, but most of BC and throughout the country.
I've been very, very fortunate. I think I just keep doing it so long. You just keep doing it and do it. And I've also been lucky because I'm still, I hear songwriters that I've heard, they make albums, and then about three albums later, they make and they suck, you know?
Yeah, not you.
I think I've, like some of the latest stuff I've done is better, and it's at least as good as what I did. You know, I started out really, the first thing I really did, it was in 1990. And I feel like if I look over what I've done, I've still managed to have some songs that I'm proud of now. Cause I honestly listen to, I'll download someone I like and I'll listen to them and I go, man, you lost it.
But you're still proud of your recent ones too.
Yeah, I think this next project is, I've finished it.
Do you have an album that you're about to release?
Yeah, but it's done. It's all finished, but we're going, what's the point? Go release it to a mud puddle. You can't play anywhere. There's no, like, you can't do anything with it. I mean, it's not like I'm like Paul McCartney. I'm going to hand it out in all these radio. There was a stat. Somebody just laid on me. There's like, is it 3,000 new singles get released every day on Spotify?
No way.
Something like that. It's
3,000?
I'm pretty sure. I'd have to look that up.
Wow, that seems like way more than you would think, hey?
Yeah, like it's an insane. So if you're walking around going like this, and if you think you're going to get noted, or be noticed. Well, if you're Lady Gaga, well, all someone's got to do is hear you, right?
Yeah, that's how good you have to be to get noticed.
That's the magic of live too. That's the real magic of live. Then you'll see what. So when you see someone like that, you go, uh-oh, that is unbelievable. Like that is so good.
Shows you what's possible.
Yeah, as in a human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyways, I would say that, she you know, that's why, in the old days, all I ever did, honestly, I made a record, go and play a bunch of places, sell a bunch of CDs, and pays for itself.
Yeah.
Built up my ego, let's go make another one. Let's go. I just kept doing it. They kept paying for themselves. So I said, well, I'll just make another one then, you know, and make another one. And that's, it just kept going.
What were some of those earlier songs that really built your confidence? Like, I've got something here.
Well, you know, you don't know it at the time, right? You don't really know. The first album has three songs that I still play.
So that's what are those?
Cool. Northern Skies.
Oh, so that was Northern Skies is from that first major project.
The first project I ever did, that full length one. We had no money. We did it in a guy's basement. But I did it with some really cool people, and we did some songs with some guys. And you know, it was Roy Forbes says, "You got anything else?" And I says, "I got this song." And honestly, that song, I played it just as is. You hear it first time ever. He said, "Oh, that's good. We'll just keep it." And that's it. And then he played bass on it, like kind of a clunky little bass. And I said, I always heard a woman's voice answer. I said, when I had the song, no one had ever heard the song ever. So I just played it once. He put bass on it. We got this woman to sing on it. And that's essentially what you hear.
Yeah.
It's got its wobbles and everything. I hear it. And I thought, and I still play it.
I can't speak for everybody that knows your music, but for me, that's absolutely the number one song I'll always think of when I think of your music.
Yeah, well, it's kind of cool. And it was done.
It's amazing.
One off in a studio. I just sat down and that's a first take ever. First time that song was ever played. No one heard it. Not my wife or girlfriend at the time. No, she's my wife then. I won't say my wife because it's not mine. She's nobody'd heard it. Nobody'd heard that song ever. Okay. And it turned out to be this anthem. And then there's another one on there. There's two more on there that have stayed with me forever. There's a song called These Days.
Oh, so that was the exact same time was These Days.
Yeah, and So Used to Be a Rocker. Those three songs have stuck with me.
Big. Those are big Mark Perry songs. Some of the top ones right there.
Yeah, well, Roy Forbes, when I played These Days, he just looks at me and says, that's Mark Perry for a long time.
Oh, he was right.
Yeah, and I laughed. Eh? I said, what do you mean? And he says, you watch. That's going to be with you for a long time. And he's like, I loved working with Roy.
I bet. He's a legend too.
Yeah, he was a hero of mine, you know. And, you know, he inspired me more than a ton of people because he had a song called Fly Back North.
Cool. I don't know it.
Yeah. Well, Bim. That's what he was Bim. And he had a song called Fly Back North. And he had this crazy little voice saying, I think I'll fly back north. But you know what? It got me. I was in college and this guy's writing songs, you know, because, you know, everybody wanted to move south, right? Nobody wanted to live in Smithers. Nobody wanted to. You shouldn't feel good when you live around, you know, the north or whatever, you know. I mean, the capital of the north is Prince George because it's got like four pulp mills coming at you, you know. But I mean, it's not it was, I wouldn't say spat on, but you know, you had to hold your head up. And I start, when I heard that song, it just tweaked something inside me. And he had another song called Colder Than Ever, which I love to. And I can still, you know, I remember Friday evening slipping on the ice, looking for adventure in the pale moonlight. We had another beer and talked about the women who were easy around here or something like this. It was a very northern kind of, and they're cold sitting outside shaking up, you know, a couple, you know, dorky teenagers and all that. I got the vibe and I thought, you know, finally, you know, I'm hearing something that I'm connecting with. Because, you know, otherwise you're just this, you know, people talked about, you know, deserts and driving down highways with the wind blowing through your hair in California and all that shit. And it's fine, but it makes you feel it's an outsider. It's like watching a movie, right? But there's no soul connection with that. Like, I think we all would like, you know, you kind of, but then all of a sudden, like when I heard that music and then I started feeling it and I think my writing almost, it just started going, you know, it's almost I started celebrating who we were in turn. And it didn't happen like that because I was going to college, but I always had a guitar around. But it just, it's okay to be who we are. And it's okay, you know, to write about it and sing about it. You know, it's not, you're in, if they think you're a little freaky guy from the north and who cares, so be it. But be yourself, you know?
He's the one who made you think it was like acceptable to just write about what you wanted. You didn't have to write about like things that sounded like everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really cool, you know, because when I listened to These Days and I heard that feel, I said, no one's going to like this because it doesn't sound like anyone. It doesn't sound like anything on the radio. You know, really, there's no song like that. The feel, everything. No, that is the goofiest song, you know, it, and it's so, like, I don't play it every, I don't play when I do, like, I just finished playing this thing just the yesterday. Anyways, you know, I didn't play it then. I don't play it all the time, but when I play it at Driftwood Dance, I sure play it. And when I play, you know, when I play it at a concert, if I'm doing two sets, I might play it. It's always with me. And I usually play Northern Skies, usually a rocker. That is like a retro rock song. I did it. I have no business owning that song. It's this little retro rock song, and I had a little the hook, and it, and there's people going, that's the greatest rock song ever. Like, oh god.
I listened to a bunch of your music, like listened to like just you on Spotify for like 3 or 4 hours, and that's the one that just really stuck in my head. Like I couldn't get it out of there for like a week. It's still in there.
It's so cool, you know, but again, it's just so neat to have done that. I guess it's been an awesome experience, you know. I feel so lucky, and you know, it's weird, you know, you make a record and you think people are going to like this and everything, but you don't have any power over it. You don't have any, you just got to write your songs. And, you know, when I did These Days, you know, Roy said, oh, I thought no one's going to like this song because it doesn't sound like the Eagles or the Rolling Stones or any country. It just sounds like this. It's a thing, right?
It makes you like want to smile and not get down on life. It's a happy song like that. That'll kick you out of a depression right there.
Yeah, it is, and it's so fun to play. I still love playing it with a band. It's just when we play it, there's everybody kind of starts smiling. It's fun.
One of the things I've been to quite a few of your shows, and they're always just like fun, and they're it's like I know you've got some like more serious songs, but like overall, it's just a really fun experience. Do you do that on purpose, or is that just you coming out?
I think for the most part, you know, I like playing I like playing ballads, like, you know, ballads that hurt or make you think a bit. But when I'm playing, for the most part, I don't go there to bring people down. I really don't, you know, because I mean, I think it's really neat to share, like what we were talking about. But if you just get up there and harp on one negative thing after another, that's just depressing, right? They can be there, and if people want to listen to them on your record, you can have those songs. But I would, you know, if I plan a set list, I probably have a couple in a set and a couple in a set. Like they can be, they don't have to be outright nut songs, but happy. But you know, for most of it, it's kind of up. And thought, you know, maybe a sad song or two on a set, and that's it. Because it's not, when you're playing live, it feels like you should be sharing some emotion and bringing people together, and it's a privilege, right? I don't know, it's a kind of a unifying thing. It's not a let's all weep together, and some songs will do that, right?
Do you ever think of how many good nights you were a part of for people, you know, when you...
Oh. I don't dwell on that. I sometimes can't believe last year, 2019, when 2019 became 2020, Frank Horn videotaped us playing a song at the hall from the bar. And it's like this. There's like this mass of people. Eh? And I even, it's so effing fun. It is unreal. It's so much fun. And I have a big band. We get paid like $100 each. I make the same as everybody in that night. I do, because I just it's a shared thing, and it's so fun for me to do it and be part of it, because it is incredible. No, I I'm grateful. I don't dwell on that. I can't believe I was part of it sometimes. I go, my God, that was so, you're like, it's not even go home and go to bed. You're like this.
It's just, I bet.
It's magic, you know?
Sometimes I just see it. I see up there having so much fun, and what an amazing thing to help lighten up people's days. And like, I look forward to your shows for a long time. Like if I go home to Smithers and you're not playing, it's like a big checkbox that's not ticked, you know?
Oh, I'm honored. Where are you now?
I'm in Ucluelet. It's right by Tofino.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What are you doing up there?
I'm an electrician.
You're an electrician, eh?
Yeah, yeah. And I just surf and have a beautiful girlfriend.
You poor thing. Yeah, snow up there, I was going to say. Yeah, I didn't think so. Oh, that's awesome, eh? So you got a good life then.
Yeah, it's mostly how I wanted it, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, I can't complain. Every day that I'm here, like even when COVID was in full height and like that world was looking pretty grim, I've still felt like I was rich just living here. Like just living here, I felt like royalty.
Well, you're living in an incredible place.
It's like a dreamscape. It's like everybody that lives here just like they're blown away all the time by it.
I believe it. I told you. I love the West Coast anyways. Like I just love it. I can't believe I live in BC, because I stick my head out the door and I see big beautiful mountains, and I love people, you know, some people don't like Vancouver. I love Vancouver.
I love it too. I just think it's way too expensive for me.
Well, yeah, I don't want to live there, move there. I love just being there. And you know, every once in a while I go down to, you know, Vancouver Island. You see, I just love the, like, that whole area, Ucluelet, Tofino, those are just, everything down that West Coast is just, and I love Prince Rupert, you know?
Yeah.
It's a weird, it's got so much darkness in it, because right now the economy's, it's been suffering and all that, but it's got a vibe and a feel. Like, I'm not moving there. I love it.
You seem like you made up your mind a long time ago to stay in the Valley.
You know, it's kind of funny because my wife moved out here from Montreal. She moved out, she just moved out to BC, and she was a forester, needed a job, and she wanted to have a horse, right?
Yeah, I knew that your wife rode horses.
Yeah, and it's like you chase that and you see where you're going to wind up. Like that has a strong effect on where you're going to wind up. And it's not that you can go down, you know, to Langley and buy yourself a 50 acre ranch down there. You know, there's this thing called money, you know, anyways, and a horse, you know, like,
yeah,
it's realistic expectations of things. And, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I was just a mindless dumb head. You know, I tried quite a few different jobs. I ended up working 30 years on the railway, you know, but I tried a few jobs and bounced around, and I never really knew what I wanted, but the core of what I wanted, you know, it was to play music and be that. 'Cause that's the passion I have. I love the weirdness of it.
I've always wondered if you could have just been just a musician and not worked for the railway, but if you decided to sacrifice like a life as a musician because you loved the Valley so much and you didn't want to be traveling all the time and you wanted a family. Am I onto something or?
Well, you know, there was, back when there was work, I did it for a living, right? Now, I also wasn't ready for any kind of success. I didn't deserve it or anything. I was writing and in my infancy, you know what I mean? Like you're getting it, but you're not there. You're not there. And I hear that in a lot of young songwriters, and I'm not trying to criticize young people, but they, people say, what do you think of that? And I go, you know, I said, it sounds nice or whatever, but it's not moving me. And he's not believing it yet himself. That's one of the things.
You can pick that up.
Well, I do. I don't like to tell people. I'm not being discouraged. I'm not discouraging them either. And they could be really good, and they might be. Or what I like about it, you know. I mean, some people got a really nice voice, and they can rhyme things, but I'm not getting any emotion from it. Nothing. I'm not connecting with that. you know, and if you can't sing like Celine Dion, you got to watch the big love ballads, right? You know, it's, you can't deliver them. Don't get me wrong. People can write, like, there are some young people that can write something that's absolutely brilliant. Like, there's geniuses out there. Joni Mitchell was a genius when she was young. She was an absolute genius.
You know who I thought was a real life Smithers genius was Erica Vlegenhart. I could never believe how good she was. And she was like 16 doing all those amazing shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She had some things going for her. And it's always, where do you go from there, right?
You know? Yeah.
Like when you're good, very, very young, or there's a cute factor too, right? There's this, oh, you're so cute and you're so, but then, you know, where do you go? Where do you grow? Where do you grow? And sometimes you've got to get shit kicked in life. And then there'll be a little more in your music, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, and it's like, as a writer, like, I think the people that connect with us are, you know, there's got to be a core. Like, I'm not saying there's the kind of music that I might like. I mean, there is, you know, some really cool little pop singers who are, it's like, that's like machinery, right? You know, they get a kid, they get a story, and they just pump it out there. And, oh, this kid, we found him on the street, bump, 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 and all these little girls are going. That is not a kid grabbing a guitar and kind of playing his way through school bands. That's not that. That is a talent being absolutely, you know, pumped. It's machinery.
Yeah, it's like a recipe.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the norm. Most people pay that. You can be really good. That doesn't guarantee success, whatever success is.
I have a question for you. I've been really curious about, do you have any experience, like rough experiences from the road where like shows went sideways or trips went sideways?
Oh, I, you know, there's funny stories on, you know, in the road. One thing about it is when you're playing, like I was playing these kind of half-baked country band touring around, and you're in a bar, and you know, like you play for it's kind of like the lower end of town, you know, like the guys who come out on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays out there, you know, there is pretty low end, eh? I like it. I you know, the weirdest, you start, I just was friendly to everybody, and they were all nice, eh? Then no one took their knife out at me or anything. But I remember we were playing on a Tuesday. It was probably a Tuesday night in Vanderhoof. Eh? There was about six people in the bar.
Vanderhoof.
Yeah, and then about four of them started punching each other in the head. Eh?
Did you keep playing?
I mean, it was a big fight. Eh? These guys, their tables were going over, and it was just, we were playing. Away, you know? It was like, then they kicked them out. There was like one or two people left in the bar and we were playing too. And they'd say, hey, we're with you, Mark, you know, and it was hilarious, right?
So do you feel like you don't take it personally if you like play a show and there's hardly anybody there? You don't go, oh man, look at me, I'm like, no one wants to play. You just keep playing and you have fun with it?
Well, I did then. And now I go, why did I come here? More because... Maybe because of my age is part of it too. But I can take it, you know, basically if you did it all the time, if you did 10 shows and nobody showed up, then you go, why am I here? Like, what's the point? Right. You may as well not have come. I mean, if that happened, it would be pretty, luckily that hasn't happened. So who am I? Like, you know, like when we go down to New Orleans, there was right next, like three doors down from there, was people like say that played there. So why would anyone come and see me, right? So you get four people in your hotel room. But the thing is, one of them turned down her to come and see you, and they're interested in what you do. And it's not the public. It's just, it's these buyers and these kind of weird people, and they come up and they start talking to you, and then you bump into the elevator and they ask you a couple of questions. It's a really weird world. You feel, and if you think I'm trying to sell myself, then it's really weird. But the other thing is, just be yourself. And if people come in there and they like it, then you might get some work out of it. And also, if you take a couple guys you like to play with, you just have fun.
It's just like a big musical job interview, but you just treat it as a fun trip.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't worry too much, you know? You know what I mean? You just don't. If you do, I mean, you could. Like, again, if you had a bunch of loser gigs, then it would be hard to. I haven't had that happen yet to me, and I don't know if I could be able to take it. I know I would. It would be pretty. Look, I'm 64. I mean, I'm not. It's not like, well, I just wait your turn. You know, geez, I don't really want to go out and, like, if I go do this Home Roots Festival, which obviously a bunch of people on the island wanted to get me to come up and play in these different places and do a single, or I was trying to talk somebody to come and do a duo with me, because I enjoy playing with another person. And that's awesome. So I was going to do that, and then COVID came along, you know, and we had other work. We had lots of work winding up in the Calgary Folk Club, and like through Alberta, and we had a bunch of interest, you know. But it all obviously all went.
Yeah, when you're playing music full time and like you can make a living off it, does it feel like a dream come true, or does it still feel like a job?
I think it's like, it's a bit like a dream come. It's like a dream, you know. Like, it's like somebody. Yeah, I still consider it an honor, and that. Yeah, I do. I can't. It's Catholicism. I can't believe anyone would like what I do. You know, it's that. It's genuinely like, I don't feel I'm a big shot or anything. If I feel somewhat good about myself and what I do, that's where it gets to. I don't think I don't feel Trumpian or anything like that, you know.
No, you still must have a confidence in your ability to pull it off.
Well, I think in essence you have to believe. If I look back at what I did, some stuff, but other stuff was terrible, right? So, but I think I've written some good songs.
And absolutely.
I don't hardly ever make mistakes, you know. I should never say that, because it's brag. That's not a brag or anything. But I know that when I play, I know that about them. And then now, if people like it, you can't make people like what you do. It's because if you put a lot of time in, and you practice and you do your stuff, and if you don't do it well, then you don't deserve anything. You know, if you can't do it well, I don't think you deserve it. Why would you? Yeah. I try to, like Dave Nehring, he's an old painter friend of mine. And, he tells a story, and I've repeated it too many times, but he goes into a house where someone has one of his paintings on the wall, and he says he wants to take it home and fix it, you know?
Oh, he wants to take it home and fix it?
Yeah.
Oh, no way. That's so crazy.
That. And that's, you'll always have that thing about something you've done. I mean,
it's so hard to imagine that, you know, somebody creates something that you're just in awe of, and then the only thing they're thinking of is, I need to fix that.
Think of this little thing, you know, that's that you'll get bugged by a little thing, and it'll bug you. Because when you look at something, you'll see that. You don't see the whole thing. You'll see the part that when everything's going like this, and one voice goes doink, that doink bugs you. It sticks in your head, but everybody else hears the big picture.
Yeah, but at least you know that, you know.
Yeah
Is there like certain people in particular that you love playing with? Like, if you could only play with a couple people, you would choose them, like your daughter, or like
so fun playing with your daughter. My daughter is obviously, I just love playing with her. We're not super compatible, like I don't offer her as much, but I just love playing with her, because our voices work together, and we love I think she likes playing with me. You know, I might not be too welcome in her scene because bring the fossil, get the fossil out of here.
It's so fun watching you guys play together at Glenwood School. It's that's just like, I think it's a great dynamic, but maybe you see it different.
That's a magic night, eh? Like, we've had Alex's dad and everything in there. It's just like, that's just a really cool night. And I always come there, I always tell myself, you're going to have new songs for that. That's the way it's going to be, you know, because I just like the challenge of it. And it's also kind of fun trying them. And you know, we, in that David and Louie, when we sing Christmas, that at Christmas time, it's just riveting. It's so fun.
I would think that you're going to say Glenwood Hall, but do you have like a favorite venue that you play at, or does it just change on like the energy of the night and magic? Well,
there's not much better than the Driftwood School on that night. There's really not. You can't. I played Vancouver Folk Festival. I played Bouchard Gardens there, you know, and some really cool rooms in lots of towns. And you know, obviously the ones that are home, like the Glenwood Hall, is really fun. Like there's at a dance, it's just and playing in a theater is just an honor, right? Like when you have a theater and it sounds good and feels good. I don't know. There's some nights if the crowd is with you, we have a little coffee shop we play in Prince Rupert, and it's called Javadot Cup.
Oh, I don't know it. That's funny.
Yeah. And they're actually, Yuriko, she's a Japanese lady, runs it. And, you know, we play there, and I have a group of people that like what I do in Rupert, and when I play Port Essington, and when I play, you know, Queen of the North there, there's genuine goosebumps, and there's people crying in the audience. Yeah. And that's not what I'm trying to do, make people weep, but those emotional things happened that night. And you can ask the other guys who were there. It's like, holy shit. And then we play up songs, and they just love it. It's so fun to have a connection to a core of people.
Yeah.
It's an awesome. Yeah. There's so many. I love my home things, but it's an honor to have your stuff accepted anywhere, including Bella Coola, you know?
Yeah, totally. And it seems like you're just as big as, like, you're having just as much fun being part of the amazing night as everybody else. Like, you're not thinking, I'm doing this for them. You're like, this is amazing. I'm happy to be a part of this.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That is exactly, you've nailed it. That's exactly what it's about. Because if you feel, you're never above it. You're part of it. You're part of that night. That's the vibe, man. If it happens and you walk out of there and you know you've something really cool's happened. It's just the human connection is, I mean, we need it, I think, as we just
absolutely
need that. Yeah, especially now you realize how fortunate we were. Holy cow.
Do you ever wonder what your life would have been like if you just didn't have music in your life at all?
I'd probably be a freaking manic depressive. I don't know. I would have, I enjoyed, you know, hockey and those things somewhat, but I was never an addict. I even, you know, flirted with it a little bit, and it wasn't my passion. You know how if you're lucky enough to have something you really love and you get to chase it at any level, you're so lucky. Because most people don't, right? They just don't. They have so many people, and they get bitter, and I think they vote for the Republican Party. It's just weird, right? Like, if you have a passion, if you love surfing, you love the area you live, and that's basically music. I can't believe I never, you know, it's almost like I remember one of my very first nights on the road, maybe my first night in the road. We were playing in a bar somewhere, you know, Prince George Hotel, maybe 20 people in the bar or something, you know.
Oh, that's a lot though.
Yeah, you know? One night, we were a nobody band. And I remember the drummer and I, we were sitting there with the beer after the gig. It was 2 o'clock in the morning or something. Holy fuck, we're on the road. We're professional musicians. We're sitting there. Holy shit, Is this real? Is this real? You know, like I couldn't believe it, right? I couldn't believe I was on the road making a living, getting paid to play music.
It's crazy.
I could not freaking believe it. When you said that, I just bought back that night. He and his drummer, he was a Squaresville looking guy as they come in. But he was grinning from ear to ear, just shaking his head. We're getting paid to play. We're getting paid to play. And I was just dumbfounded. I said, you know, we are. We are.
That's amazing. It doesn't seem like you had any regrets about working for the railway either. Like, it doesn't seem like you're bitter about it.
I would have had no family life, no nothing. And you know what? I think I, in essence, if you know how things work out, I needed life to become a songwriter. I don't need whimsical rhymes and poetry or anything. Like, I love beautiful language, don't get me wrong there, but I needed to live life. I have a song called 1 to 3. It's just a little railway song, right? It's 1 to 3 and 3 to 1 and 2 cars, 2 track, 5. It's about switching.
Oh yeah, I totally know that one.
Yeah, it's about switching. And it's, you know, you're standing in a lead somewhere, you're throwing cars over here and throwing, and there's a guy out there catching them. And it's a really crazy job, right? They don't do it anymore, but that's the way we worked.
Yeah, that sounds dangerous.
Well, you know what? You know what the railway used to have? Like, the highest mortality, it was the most dangerous job there was. It had the highest mortality rate and missing limbs. Before air brakes were invented, you know, you think about this. This is in the earlier days. When you see those old boxcars and stuff, they'd all come rolling down this track, and the brakeman would be here, and they have to stop. How are they going to stop? This guy has to go up, get a brake, run at the end, run across the top of the car, jump to the next car, tie on the next brake. As we're moving, these cars are, so he's jumping from one car to the other, and then he ties a brake on here. Then he jumps to the next car. Then he ties on another brake. And if you slip and you fall, you run over and you die. It used to be the highest mortality rate of all the jobs there was.
That sounds like a really dangerous way to go about stopping a train.
Yeah, well, this was before air brakes, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, it seems stupid, but I guess that's just what you had to do.
I mean, what did a wagon train have? A big stick on a, you know, like you think of, they didn't have, you know, brake shoes and everything yet. Well, they had brake shoes, kind of, you know, but they were manually tied on. They didn't have any, and they had these things that are called stem winders, a really long brake shaft, and they were in the top of the cars, and you'd turn them, that you had to jump to that car to get to it.
Oh my gosh. So
it's crazy.
If you did your job like 50 years, 100 years earlier, you would have been doing that.
Legless. Like, amputees was just so, so common.
Oh my gosh. What a, like.
In the old days, right? This is the early days of railroading. Yeah. But that's, yeah, I guess, I don't know, getting back to, yeah, I think in essence, a lot of songs I got to write were because there were experiences and things that happened. And I think that's the essence of what I needed to have happen, you know. I don't know that if I was on the road that I would have, I think sometimes, you know, sometimes a firsthand, I don't know. I'll never know the answer to that, right? I think I would have written songs, but you need time by yourself to write songs.
I think you also need to go through tough times to really be able to understand everything. Like, if everything's just a breeze, like, your songs are only going to be like, you know, they're going to be pretty one-dimensional. But like, to really, you have to kind of suffer and not enjoy things to be able to really really
it's good for you.
Well, it's not fun, but you come out of it wiser, and like, you don't always regret it.
Yeah, The bad thing is that pain hurts. It's kind of good for us in a way. You're sounding like very Catholic here.
Oh, really? No, not me.
No, but you know what I mean. It is kind of funny, right? Well, I'm just bugging you. I don't mean anything by that. It's just funny. It's just I think honest emotion, like of any kind, is powerful, right? Like, be it hopefully more joy than, but, you know, like some real honest pain, it moves you. And if you can, and even some real honest joy, if it moves you, and you know, you've been shit kicked, like these days is probably as much about, you know what, sure, a couple bad things happen, but I'm going to get over it and I'm going to be stronger, you know, and that it's a simple message or anything, but it's maybe that has to happen 4 or 5 times in your, or some traumatic, you know, stumbles and trips and slaps and failures and a few of those things. And like, that's what we do, human beings.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're not.
But now your struggles have led to us having these great songs to now, think about.
I'm tickled that, like, it is funny. Do you know Ian Olmsted?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, he's a funny guy because he played with me last days.
PG. Yeah,
we did the live show there. We were talking, but he sings these old songs of mine. He knows words to stuff, and I'm listening to him. How the hell do you know that? It just blows my mind, eh? That, but he's a freak. His brain is not normal.
He is the real deal musician, that guy.
He's close to a freaking genius. I think he has to smoke a lot of weed so he can come down and level off with the rest of us, you know.
He's the genuine article.
Yeah, he's very artistic, musical, brilliant. He's got a memory like, I actually, it was a cool little trio, you know, because the other guy I play with, Mark Thibault, do you know Mark?
I know who he is, but I don't know him.
He's Mark is an artist, eh? He built those Rayco guitars and everything really detail-y, like, some say, oh, you build a guitar, you just get a kit. No, to do them good, it's like saying, you know, it's like putting a big spike through a board is the same as building a cabinet. It's not the same. Like, it's insulting the craft. Like a really, really well-built thing is hard to do, right? Because it's super fine detail. Yeah. And he's kind of given that up. But he's still doing a little bit of it. But he's an artist now. He's painting this abstract stuff, right? Very abstract.
That's cool. And
when he plays music, he kind of gets caught in that. Like, I love it, but there's some wrong notes. He goes fishing. He goes kind of out there when I play with him. Sometimes I go, oh, my God. The other parts, I love what he comes up with because he's his artist thing. Like, he'll just, when you've given up on him, he'll come up with a beautiful line. He's a funny dude, and I appreciate. Anyways, to throw a trio like that is not your typical trio when I went down there. Because I got Ian to play more accordion than he was comfortable with. He's right on the edge. You know, he can play accordion, but he's not a great accordion player or anything. But so
he made him pick him out of his comfort zone.
Yeah, it was pretty artistic, but it was fun. You know, I enjoy it. And they're really nice guys. You know, they're that's one of the key things. And I've been very fortunate for a long time is to meet good people to play with. The people I've played with they're all nice people. And I can say, and honestly, I've played with some lemons over the years, you know, some door kids that I couldn't stand, especially now they've turned into, you know, super right-wing kind of weirdos and stuff like that. But that's growing, right? You know, you're going to somebody, it's like when you're going through the schoolyard, pretty soon you find you don't want to hang out with that guy. And that's what.
Yeah.
You know, you both walk and talk, but that's about as, and you don't want to be with them.
Yeah, yeah. It happens with all types of relationships.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Darn rakes.
Anyways, Mark, I should probably let you go and eat some supper.
Yeah, no, that was, I hope we, it was good fun talking to you. And I hope
it was fun talking to you. I knew it was going to be, I was looking forward to it for the whole, like, last week. I mean, I never doubted it was going to be fun.
Well, it's funny. Life takes you on some journeys, eh? How old are you?
I'm 38. I just turned 38 last Friday.
38. Yeah.
But I also say I've been 20 for
Well, you're living in a pretty nice place.
Yeah, it's. But yeah, this is my spot for sure.
Incredible.
Yeah, just so it's cool. it's just my type of people.
Really sounds good. Well, good for you. And really nice talking to you, man.
Thanks, Mark. Nice talking to you too. I can't wait to see another show when the world starts spinning again.
What's gonna happen? All right.
But thank you so much, Mark. You really honored me by letting me talk to you.
Okay, Rob. You take care, man. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Yeah. See you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mark Perry. My guest next week is Tofino born and raised pro surfer Noah Cohen. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. And if you enjoyed it, listen to some more episodes and tell your friends and listen to the next ones. I'm going to walk you out of this episode with a classic Mark Perry song, These Days.
I wish that I could go crazy like that. He is an uninhibited man. Dances so loose and out of control. Seems unafraid to let himself go. I am conservative in my dance. Afraid to look like a fool and take a chance. He just moves so easy and free. But he's not the man I want to be. Yeah, I'm doing okay. Couldn't be him anyway. I'm walking much stronger these days. These days, I'm a little bit stronger these days. I laugh a little bit longer these days. I think I'm coming around. Long Cadillac. He has an ice maker in the back. He dresses much better than you or me. And he claims you are what people see. He likes to spread a little money around and see what new friends can be. But he's not the man I want to be. Yeah, I'm doing okay. Couldn't be him anyway. I'm walking much stronger these days. These days, I'm a little bit stronger these days. I laugh a little bit longer these days. I think I'm coming around. Stronger than